Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The leadership of the Florida House takes aim at the state's sanctuary cities.
When it comes to criminal illegals, there should be no discussion, there should be no debate, there should be no hesitation, there should be no consideration, as they need to go and they need to stay gone, and we should all be committed to that.
Also tonight, Florida lawmakers say kids whose parents are in jail need to be able to move more quickly in the direction of a more normal life.
The estimates, tens of thousands of our kids in foster care have an incarcerated parent.
We'll also hear about a gun bill that seemingly rose from the dead, find out if checking out your DNA could hurt your insurability, and also check out the debate on pornography as a public health crisis. On this next to the last day in week two of the 2018 Florida lawmaking session, I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Relations between the current Speaker of the Florida House and the state's local governments have been a bit tense since last year. No, scratch that. Those relations have been downright frosty since Richard Corcoran began pushing legislation upon assuming the speakership last year that would transfer a lot of city and county decision-making to state government. State House Speaker Richard Corcoran wants the Department of Homeland Security to investigate two Florida mayors for supporting sanctuary city policies. It's the latest in Corcoran's push for attention on the issue, and we get the story from Lynn Hatter.
Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum and St. Pete Mayor Rick Kreisman, both Democrats, are being called out for what House Speaker Richard Corcoran says are sanctuary policies, which limit local assistance with federal immigration enforcement. While the city of Tallahassee has no formal sanctuary rules in place, Gillum, who's running for governor, does favor sanctuary policies, and he's not buying what Corcoran is trying to sell.
Yeah, I think that the speaker should spend his time on trying to figure out how we make this state, one of the most diverse states in the United States, a welcoming place, a place of laws, but also a place of compassion.
Corcoran is widely expected to announce a bid for governor, and he's selling a proposal to block cities from passing so-called sanctuary laws. He spells it out in this TV ad.
I led the fight to pass a bill to punish sanctuary cities, restrict their funds, and require law enforcement to cooperate with the federal immigration authorities. No more sanctuary cities, no more breaking the law. It's time to end this policy once and for all.
Recently, the Florida House approved Corcoran's priority. Republican Representative Larry Metz has sponsored the proposal in recent years.
First of all, the bill defines and prohibits sanctuary policies and requires repeal of any existing sanctuary policy that is in effect already within 90 days. It requires state and local governmental entities and law enforcement agencies to cooperate with federal immigration authorities.
Still, House Bill 9 is a long shot in the Senate, but Corcoran and Metz may have gotten a boost to their cause. Courts have ruled federal detainer requests are just that, and local governments can't be forced to comply. But this week, U.S. Immigration, Customs and Enforcement, or ICE, announced a deal with 17 Florida sheriffs that would allow county jails to hold undocumented immigrants who are arrested on local charges in custody until they can be transferred to ICE. Right now, many immigrants are released before a transfer can take place due to concerns over potential lawsuits. lawsuits. The deal involves Pinellas County, home to St. Pete Mayor Rick Kreisman. Pinellas Sheriff Bob Gualtieri is praising the move.
When it comes to criminal illegals, there should be no discussion, there should be no debate, there should be no hesitation, there should be no consideration, as they need to go and they need to stay gone, and we should all be committed to that.
The deal would let local law enforcement hold undocumented immigrants for up to 48 hours and pay the local sheriff's office up to $50 for doing so. It effectively gives local officials cover from lawsuits and challenges to detention. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Florida lawmakers are working on a bill they hope will help pave a faster path forward for children of incarcerated parents. That story from Regan McCarthy.
When a child enters the Florida foster care system, officials say the goal is to help that child find a permanent living situation, or permanence, as quickly as possible. Often that can mean either reunification with their parents or adoption. But Jacksonville Republican Senator Aaron Bean says that process can be complicated when the child's parents are in jail.
The estimates tens of thousands of our kids in foster care have an incarcerated parent. Incarcerated parents slow down the permanency process.
But Bean says he has a bill that would help to address that by mapping the way forward for incarcerated parents as well as their children.
What this bill does is in accordance with existing law, we ask DCF to work with people in prison to speed up the process. They could get services and help their case plan. That's what it is, because DCF has a case plan for every kid in the welfare system to help speed up permanency. That case plan should include services that are available in prison that parent, should they wish to be reunited with their kids, to begin working on becoming a better parent.
Alan Abramowitz is the executive director of Florida's Guardian Ad Litem program, which provides court advocates for abused, neglected, or abandoned children. He says his organization is excited for the possibilities in Bean's proposal.
And what we would do is work with the prisons where the incarcerated parents are. And if you've noticed in a lot of the appropriations committees, there's a lot of appropriation bills for children of inmates. We'll work with those groups too. But to ensure those children get those parents get the services and know where they are at the prison prior to getting out, because if we don't do that, we have to start the clock ticking the day they get out, and it delays permanency. If we don't do this, it's to the detriment of children.
And Abramowitz points out the bill still allows the Department of Children and Families to terminate a parent's rights when needed.
If the parent did something egregious or they were in prison for an extended period of time, like 15 years, the parent's rights would still be terminated if it was in their best interest. So nothing stops the right of the department or the guardian ad litem parties of the case to pursue termination of parental rights if it's in the best interest of the child.
And Stewart Republican Representative Gail Harrell says that's important.
Because not only does it allow a child to have a relationship with their parent who is incarcerated, but also on the flip side, if it's in the best interest of the child, it allows that termination to happen as quickly as possible.
The bill got committee approval in both the House and Senate Thursday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida lawmakers are looking again to give places of worship attached to a school the authority to allow guns on the property.
As we have said before, guns carried by civilians in a place do not belong in children's schools. Allowing more guns in schools will increase the risk of violence to children.
Florida lawmakers are hoping to make sure results from genetic tests like 23andMe won't affect your insurance coverage.
The now widespread availability of genetic tests has given rise to questions and concerns over the appropriate use of your genetic information.
And some Florida lawmakers want to declare the use of pornography as a major public health issue in the state. But one representative, who's a doctor, says leave that to the professionals.
I'm just a country doctor, but I don't trust the legislature to be the best place to come up with public health policy priorities. I like to see the professionals come to it with us.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Will the third time be the charm? A Florida lawmaker is trying to revive a gun bill that has failed to pass twice during the 2018 legislative session. Sasha Cordner reports.
Last month, a few Republicans joined several Democrats in voting down two bills giving schools connected to places of worship. Still, that didn't deter Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley from bringing a similar bill before the Senate Judiciary Committee again.
This attacks a very simple problem that is pervasive throughout the country, and particularly I want to deal with it in Florida, and that is communities of faith that are vulnerable, as we've seen in Sulphur Springs, Texas, Charleston, South Carolina. These communities of faith need to be able to protect themselves, the safety of their congregation. This is very narrow. It just empowers that the concealed weapon permit holder could be a part of that safety team.
While a church, for example, may allow concealed weapons holders to carry a gun on its private property, Florida law does not allow for the carrying of a firearm on any school campuses. So because many churches have schools on their grounds, it could be considered illegal for licensed weapons holders to have a firearm because the church has a school on its property. And Eric Friday with the gun rights group Florida Carry says that's unfair.
This is simply an issue of private property rights, First Amendment, and the right of people who have paid for a church that they go to on Sunday to be able to be armed for the protection of themselves, their families, and their communities. Now, we've had cases in this country before where people in red have tried to tell people how to worship, and when they couldn't have their guns. We shouldn't let people in red decide now whether or not people have a right in their own house of worship to bear arms.
A sea of people with red shirts came to speak during Thursday's Senate Judiciary Committee. They represent Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Kate Kite is part of the gun control advocacy group. She says lawmakers should be looking into what she called common sense policies to protect religious institutions.
We also believe and support that religious institutions who choose to allow concealed permit holders on their premises, that's fine. That is their choice. Where we take an issue is that this bill seems primarily aimed at allowing guns in schools that have religious institutions associated with them. The impacts of the language of this bill are unclear at best and have the potential to be very dangerous.
And since the bill has failed before during this session, Kite says she doesn't see why lawmakers are continuing to pursue the measure.
As we have said before in this committee, we feel that guns carried by civilians in a place do not belong in children's schools. Allowing more guns in schools will increase the risk of violence to children.
Still, with only 5 minutes left of the two-hour committee, Baxley's measure never got voted on Thursday. The bill is expected to get taken up again during the next meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
One of the biggest risks for getting HIV is injection drug use. Now there's a push to legalize needle exchanges across the state of Florida, with two state lawmakers announcing their effort at the Capitol. The bill's modeled on a pilot project recently begun in South Florida. From member station WLRN, Health News Florida's Sammy Mack spent a morning with the mobile needle exchange clinic in Miami.
There's a metro rail line that runs along 11th Street in Overtown and an I-95 highway overpass just beyond it. A lot of South Florida passes through this neighborhood, but every Tuesday and Thursday morning, one van stays right here. Inside this van is a cork board displaying seven syringes of different gauges.
So this is our thing that's right on the menu. We got from 31 gauge to 27 gauge.
Emmy Martinez is the outreach coordinator for the Idea Exchange. Injection drug users come here to swap their old needles for free fresh ones, getting used needles off the street and reducing the need to share dirty needles.
Give me 60 28-100s and 10 35-16s.
One of the regulars here is a man who goes by Arrow. We're not using his legal name. The program keeps participants anonymous. Arrow has been shooting heroin off and on since the late 70s. He remembers his first hit. It numbed the back pain he suffered after a surgery. Before the needle exchange showed up, Arrow says he didn't always have clean syringes.
I had to try to clean out the ones that I had. Every once in a while, I did use someone else's, and That was a thrill ride, you know, wondering whether or not I was going to catch anything. But I'm blessed, I'm 57, and I don't have anything.
The IDEA in Idea Exchange stands for Infectious Disease Elimination Act, a 2016 Florida law that allows for legal needle exchange in Miami-Dade County. Needle exchanges have proven one of the most effective ways to reduce HIV infection among injection drug users, and HIV rates in South Florida are consistently among the highest in the country. But historically, efforts to stop the spread of the virus through dirty needles have run afoul of drug laws. Emmy Martinez spent years trying to get around that before she worked here.
In the 90s, we used to do a sort of underground, safer injection where we would give people bleach kits, and we would hide them in condom bags, because if we got caught with the bleach kits, we could get arrested for paraphernalia.
The IDEA Act created a limited legal pathway to distribute free needles. It's a 5-year test pilot only in Miami-Dade County. The exchange offers on-site HIV and hepatitis testing in the back of the van, too. There's wound care for abscesses and referrals for infection and addiction treatment. The needle exchange marked its 1-year anniversary on World AIDS Day in December.
It was a very emotional day.
It was an emotional day for Dr. Hansel Tooks, partly because he started lobbying for a needle exchange when he was still a student at the University of Miami. Now he's a professor at UM's med school and runs the IDEA Exchange. The van travels all over Miami-Dade County, and there's a fixed location in Overtown.
This was something that should have been in Florida decades ago, but at the same time, we were so proud and so happy to have over 500 people who use our program. The number of needles, 85,000 needles off Miami Street.
Tooks expects it'll take a couple of years to see a dip in new HIV cases as a result of this program. But as the opioid epidemic explodes, there's an immediate impact. The IDEA Exchange also hands out naloxone, or Narcan, the drug used to stop overdoses. Just like used needles, people can exchange spent naloxone cartridges for new doses. So far, a couple hundred cartridges have come back to Tooks and his crew.
These are 235 lives that were saved. It's probably the most pro-life thing. You know, everybody's life is important, and because we're able to distribute naloxone, these people are getting another chance at life.
That alone, he says, should give the needle exchange expansion bill bipartisan support when it goes to session this month. It took 4 tries to get the IDEA Act passed. Tooks says support for the project grew as more legislators saw the effects of opioid addiction in their communities. Without needle exchange in other places, people have come to Overtown from the Lower Keys and Palm Beach County. So this legislative session, Tooks is behind companion bills in the Florida House and Senate that would expand this kind of needle exchange access to the rest of the state.
If it does pass, how soon can you get into other places in the state?
Immediately. We know how to do it now. My team is incredible, and I will disperse them to provide capacity building assistance, and we will make it happen everywhere.
After all, he says, the van is mobile. For Health News Florida, I'm Sammy Mack in Miami.
Florida lawmakers are looking to ensure genetic tests won't affect eligibility for insurance coverage. Sean Mulcahy reports the House Health and Human Services Committee unanimously passed a measure preventing insurance companies from using genetic information when making policy decisions.
I'm just trying to learn as much as I can about my culture. I put the gele on my head and I looked into the mirror and I was trying not to cry because it's a hat. But it's like the most important hat I've ever owned.
Genetic testing kits like those from Ancestry.com and 23andMe were among the most popular Christmas gifts of 2017. These tests use DNA samples to trace family history, and a few, like 23andMe, even provide information about possible hair loss or risk for certain diseases. But some worry these tests could be used by insurance companies that either affect the chances of coverage or the premiums paid. Under federal law, health insurance companies cannot charge higher premiums or make coverage decisions based solely on genetic information. But these provisions don't extend to other types of insurance, like life insurance. A measure in the Florida House would expand Florida law to include life, long-term care, and disability insurance. It prohibits providers from canceling, limiting, or denying coverage, or from setting higher premiums based on genetic information. These prohibitions wouldn't apply if a person has already been diagnosed with a condition.
This didn't come about because anybody did anything wrong or I'm mad. This is, Dr. Masullo is right, this is a personal protection thing of, now that these tests are everywhere, what do we want to do with the information? How are they going to be used?
That was the bill's sponsor, Sanford Republican Representative Jason Broder. But the Florida Insurance Council's Paul Sanford argues genetic tests should be able to be used for, quote, proper purposes.
And there are several tests where if a gene is present, there's a 100% probability that you're going to get that disease. And one of those diseases like that is Huntington. So the genetic test is actually a diagnosis in that case, and we couldn't use that under this bill.
Sanford worries people who learn they are predisposed to these types of illnesses will then buy insurance, but won't have to disclose the results of the genetic tests.
The first thing, quite frankly, you do is you run down and buy your life insurance policy and long-term care policy to make sure you get things paid for.
Some DNA companies stipulate the results of genetic tests are proprietary information, meaning they retain ownership of the results. And Republican Representative David Santiago of Deltona worries that information can then be sold to insurance companies.
They could then sell this information to whatever databases that many could query. So in that scenario that I just described, then it could be used in underwriting.
As the bill currently stands, insurance companies can ask if you've taken a genetic test, but you don't have to answer or disclose the results of the test. However, if you answer yes, even if you don't share your genetic information, it can affect your chances of getting a policy or the rates you're offered. Additionally, the results of the test cannot affect an existing policy for the extent of the term, but can be used upon renewal. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy in Tallahassee.
Now with a look at other capital action, here's Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
Among the bills considered in committee today, House Bill 85, entitled Voter Registration List Maintenance. This bill authorizes the Department of State to become a member of a non-governmental entity if the sole purpose of the membership is to share and exchange information with elections officials in other states in order to verify voter registration information. House Bill 85 passed the Public Integrity and Ethics Committee and now heads to the full House. House Bill 471, Unmanned Aircraft. This bill prohibits drone operation over or near a state correctional institution, a secure detention facility, or a county detention facility. It also clarifies that law enforcement can use drones to facilitate collection of evidence at a crime scene or a traffic crash. The bill passed the House Justice Appropriations Subcommittee and has one more committee stop. And House Bill 973, entitled Performance of Physician Assistants and Advanced Registered Nurse Practitioners. This bill authorizes physician assistants to sign, certify, stamp, verify, or endorse documents that would otherwise require a signature, certification, stamp, verification, or endorsement of a physician. The bill does provide for some exceptions. Similarly, it authorizes advanced registered nurse practitioners to sign, certify, stamp, verify, or endorse documents that would otherwise require the signature, certification, stamp, verification, or endorsement of a physician. All of this under supervision and within the framework of an established protocol. The bill was voted favorable by the House Health and Human Services Committee, and an identical Senate bill, Senate Bill 708, is waiting to be heard by the Senate Health Policy, Judiciary, and Rules Committees. And finally, Senate Bill 118, Visitation of Schools by State Legislatures, authorizes a member of the state legislature to visit any district school, including charter schools, in his or her legislative district. This bill passed the Senate Rules Committee and is now headed for the full Senate. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight, one state lawmaker thinks pornography is a public health concern that's damaging young Floridians. But one of his colleagues, who's a doctor, says the state has bigger issues to deal with. Kate Payne has that story.
Riverview Republican Representative Ross Spano initially wanted to declare pornography a public health crisis in the state of Florida. Thursday, he softened that assertion a bit and won overwhelming support for the bill.
Basically, what the resolution says is that the state of Florida recognizes this issue as a public health risk, not a crisis, a public health risk, and acknowledges the need for education, prevention, research, and policy changes to protect the citizens of the state.
Spano says porn use is connected to a litany of negative outcomes.
Research has found a correlation between pornography use, mental and physical illnesses, difficulty forming and maintaining intimate relationships, unhealthy brain development and cognitive function, and deviant, problematic, or dangerous sexual behavior, recent research. has also indicated that one can develop compulsive disorder.
He's especially concerned that rapidly evolving technology is putting porn right in the hands of kids.
And I asked my child, well, when did you first? He said, I was probably 10. I said, well, how did you? He said, an older kid showed me, an older kid in the neighborhood.
Stewart Republican Representative Gail Harrell supports the bill, which she says is bolstered by scientific evidence.
We have been very careful to research every aspect of this. We have it. Our staff has worked remarkably well in really looking at all facts and figures and making sure that this is actually, that there's evidence behind every statement in this resolution.
But Sebring Republican Representative Kerry Pigman says porn use does not warrant this kind of attention. He was the only one to vote no Thursday.
You know, I'm a practicing physician. We have problems with hypertension, with obesity, with diabetes, with Zika. We have a whole list of things that are important medically. I'm not so sure that we need to spend legislative time enunciating a specific complaint when we have others that are far more pressing.
And Pigman says the research around porn and negative behaviors is unclear. What is clear?
STDs are increased. We have HIV transmission, which stepped up a bit. We have Zika.
When asked if kids could benefit from more sex education, Spano says that's a separate issue and largely a family's responsibility. Pigman wants his colleagues to stay away from ranking diseases and conditions. Leave the declarations to the professionals at the Department of Health, he says.
I keep thinking about the other things that are public health hazards, which involve a far larger number of people. And obviously there's a political connection when we start ranking a hierarchy from the legislature.
Spano's resolution is largely ceremonial, but there are political advantages. Spano is running for attorney general and says he wants to protect Florida's children and families as the state's next top cop. His bill has one more committee stop before it heads to the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Devondra Alston, Sean Mulcahy, our sister operation, the Florida Channel, and contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport, and please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades restoration and fish and wildlife conservation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.